Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, 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 what's up, everybody? This is Lee. This is Lee from Lee and Key's Real Talk, Wednesday night edition. Episode 128. Me and Key's gonna get up here and talk about a couple things tonight. We got the UFC review from, past weekend. Then we got the big heavyweight fight this weekend with Wilder and Fury 2. You know, a lot of stuff to talk about in combat sports. But just want to say hope everybody had a good day. Thanks for tuning in. Episode 128, live and direct. What's up, Keys? How you doing today, bro?
Yo. What's up, brother?
Yo. Man, chillin'.
Man. Everybody having a good day out there? Lee, you having a good day out there?
I'm having a good day. Got to get on here and shovel my driveway after the show.
Yo, I was watching this movie the other day. The movie is called, you know, Liam Neeson?
Oh, yeah.
Liam Neeson. So I was watching a movie. I want to say it was called Cold Pursuit, and I think it was based out your way, the movie where it took place. And you should have seen the snow that they had in the movie. Like, you couldn't even, this movie, there was so much snow where it took place that they were pretty much had to drive like with the plow. The snow was like feet high. Like it was a couple feet high, easily, probably 6 feet high. Y'all get that?
Yeah, that's the case. If that's the case, he was up in the mountains.
Yeah,
the mountains get a lot of snow here, bro. The mountains
start
getting snow.
Wow, I didn't know it was like that.
Yeah, the mountains start getting snow like late September, early October. Ski season normally don't start to late October, early November. So, you know, that's just how I go here, man.
Yeah, I mean, I always figured y'all got a lot of snow, but I guess just my idea of what a lot of snow was just not, was way off par with how much there actually is.
Yeah, bro, it's,
I didn't realize it was like that.
Yeah, man, wintertime is, wintertime can be treacherous out here, Doc.
Damn, man. I mean, I don't know if you're a fan of Liam Neeson movies, but if you haven't watched it, maybe check out that movie. It was pretty good. I watched it twice.
What is it called again?
I want to say it was called Cold Pursuit. I might have to just double check. I'm going to fact check that right now. Yeah, it's called Cold Pursuit. It just came out recently. Yeah, it just came out last year.
Okay.
It's, it was pretty good. It was pretty good.
Yeah,
movie.
Man.
Typical Liam Neeson movie. If you watch his other movies, you watch that movie, you'll be like, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, because, you know, I think I was overtaken after Taken 2, where he was, I think it was Taken 1 where he was like, yeah, left here, right there, two blue. I was like, man, come on, man. You in the trunk of the car, for real. But, yeah. But I did like the movie.
What do you say?
The movie The Gray that he made about the wolves. That was okay.
Oh, I didn't see that one. It was
good. That's okay. It's all right. Very interesting.
Yeah, no, I didn't see The Gray, but I know I feel what you're saying. I don't know. I think it was Taken 2. I wasn't really feeling that one. They kind of lost me with the Taken 2. I liked the first Taken movie. The second one, I wasn't really crazy about. And then the third one, I thought the third one was pretty good. But, yeah, to my memory, the third one was pretty good. I usually like the movies.
Yeah, I didn't even watch the third one, so I didn't even know it was a third one.
I think there was a third one, unless I... Yeah, I want to say there was a third one, but Man, I don't even know because there's so many movies kind of like that now. So
yeah.
But,
so man, let's jump into it,
definitely...
man. Let's.
What do you say?
I was like, man, let's jump into it, man. We got a lot to talk about, bro.
Yeah, so I had some big questions that I want to, you know, I had some big things that I want to run by you tonight. And
I'm all ears.
It just depends which one of them you think you want to jump into first.
Hey, I'm ready, man. Whatever one you want to hit me with first.
So I'm going to say this. This weekend, it has... arguably the biggest boxing fight on the biggest probably one of the biggest fights in boxing is this weekend. Definitely one of the biggest fights in 2020 that we know of right now. Maybe the biggest fight in boxing. I mean, I'm not an aficionado like you are, but I know a little bit, and I'm pretty sure that's going to be that's a crazy one. And the UFC's got a crazy one that's happening too, because I don't know if you might have forgot, but they have some ranked lightweights that are going at it in the main event, and I'm also excited about that one. That's going to be a hell of a fight. You got Dan Hooker is fighting Paul Felder.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So
I tweeted earlier today
What is that?
I tweeted earlier today that Dan Hooker, Paul Felder fight could be early fight of the year potential if it lives up to the billing, because both of them are strappers. So, yeah, if we get five rounds of scrapping, it definitely might be a fight of the year candidate. And they face off was freaking awesome. The one that they had on Twitter this week, it was freaking awesome. So, yeah, man, I'm all in on this Felder-Hooker fight. The rest of the card is kind of weak, but the main event, if it lives up to the billing, it could be special.
Yeah, this is just one of those ones that it really doesn't matter, because a lot of the times, most times I'm looking at the whole card, but this is really one of those ones where, especially the main card, like we're usually analyzing the whole card, but this is one right here where I agree with you on the rest of the card is okay to me, but it's really just that Felder and Hooker at the end of the night is going to be unbelievable, in my opinion. And I'm really looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to that fight. I think it's, you know, they seem to be very, you know, there's a lot of energy going into this one. I don't really know too much about what was said back and forth, but it just seems like these two guys are very, there's some animosity going into this fight. I don't really know where it really originated from, but just the way they looked in the face, I don't know if it's just like the nature of the beast, or if it's, you know, just being two of the best lightweights in the world right now. I mean, I guess it could be both, but it looks like these two, when I was watching that face-off, these two guys were locked in. And you don't see too many face-offs like that in the UFC these days. A lot of guys are, and it's not a knock to anybody, but a lot of guys and, you know, most of the fighters are very, you know, they're very calm. You don't really see much focus in face-offs. You know, it's very, there's a lot of blank stares, and you can't really tell if the fighters are really locked in on their opponent. But this one, you could definitely see that both of these guys, they are ready to go. These guys are ready to throw hands, and we know that these two guys love to stand and bang. And I think it's going to be an all-out war in this fight. They look like they want to tear each other's heads off, if we are being realistic. They look like they want to eat each other's flesh. And
yeah, man, it's gonna be something, bro. I think if it lives up to the standout, oh my goodness gracious, we in for a treat. But it just has to live up. I think somebody is going to change their game plan up. I think somebody is going to come in there and test the other guy's wrestling. I don't think it's going to be a stand-up war. It might start off that way, but I think round about round two or round three, somebody will go for a takedown to see whether or not the other guy can adjust or see whether or not they can out-wrestle the guy or maybe go for a submission. But we shall see, man. We shall see. Because I know Hooker, he's definitely been on fire here lately. Felder has been on fire here lately. And Felder has been clamoring for a top five opponent. So, man, if it just lives up to the billing, like I said, it would definitely, definitely be a potential Fight of the Year candidate. And we only in February.
And, you know, I think one thing that can be said going into that fight is, and it's just really hit me right now, is if I'm Paul Felder, I'm going to go back and take a look at Dan Hooker's fight versus Edson Barboza, and I'm just going to watch that film. I'm going to really analyze what happened there, because if anybody remembers that fight, Barboza absolutely dominated Dan Hooker the entire duration of the fight. It was so lopsided. It was one of the most lopsided lightweight fights I've seen in the last year or so, easily. And we've seen a good amount of lightweight in the last 2 years, probably, actually. And we've seen, you know, especially for a decision, because I'm not talking about like just a finish, because a finish isn't necessarily lopsided, because you got a quick finish, you're not really seeing where the guys are at in the given area that the fight is taking place in. But where you had Barboza and Hooker, the fight went to distance, and Barboza absolutely dominated. And a big thing to take from it is Barboza was throwing a lot of kicks in that fight. He was throwing a lot of kicks to the body. And it seemed like Hooker didn't have really much of a response for it. And he kept coming forward and just taking the kicks to the body. And Barboza was just eating him alive. I mean, given a lot of people said, you know, Hooker is a tough guy, I give him props for just keep coming forward and hanging in there. You know, he didn't, you know, a lot of people would have bowed out and, you know, went back to that corner after a lot of those shots that he took and called it quits, but he didn't. You know, he kept coming forward. He stood in front of Barboza. But it's just, if you're somebody who is going to be fighting Dan Hooker this weekend, I would probably look at that film and take something from that. What do you think?
You know what? I just don't think Felder's kick game is as good as Barboza, but you always can use the kick to set up other things in your game. So, but I do remember that fight, and I really didn't think Barboza, I didn't think he would dominate Hooker the way he did. And, oh, my goodness, he dominated Hooker. And Hooker made no adjustments. It was like you said, he kept coming forward. And it was like, can we get some coaching? Can we do something else? Catch a kick? You know, something. Because, you know, like I always say, when top guys are fighting top guys, sometimes your plan A ain't going to work, man. So you got to be able to adjust your game plan and maybe have a game plan B or maybe even a plan C, because top guys aren't going to let your plan A beat them. But I think Felder could use some of the kicks to use some of the kicks to set up other stuff in his game. So I'm probably quite sure he did watch the Barboza fight, but he just don't have the lethal kick game that Barboza got. But I agree with you. I would use it just to see whether or not Hooker has adjusted to being kicked. Because, you know, a lot of UFC fighters don't check kicks. You know, they don't throw kicks themselves. So, yeah, man, I just want to see what Felder does, man, what he does to really negate Hooker's aggressiveness. Because Hooker is always coming forward.
Yeah, we'll have to see. I mean, that fight's gonna be a really good one. It's gonna be unbelievable, and hopefully I can. And do you know is the Wilder Fury 2 on Friday night or Saturday night?
Should be Saturday, July 22nd.
So they pretty much have. So the UFC is gonna have to go head to head with the Wilder Fury. Damn, I mean. I'd say if it was a bigger event. What?
Nah, what's going to happen is that the Hooker, because they fight in Australia somewhere, aren't they?
Oh, the timing. What? Yeah, I didn't know where the fight was taking place, so the time zone.
Yeah, I'm about to look it up now. Because I think they fight in Australia somewhere, and I think that's definitely going to play a part. But normally, how it's been working here lately is when the UFC main event go off, the boxing main event starts. So that's normally how it's been going here lately. But I want to say this fight is actually it's in Europe somewhere. Yeah, it's in Auckland. So it starts at 2 p.m.
Okay, so
that
won't be
that
long over by the time. By the time that comes around, that'll be long over. So, I mean, you mean the main card starts at 2 or like the prelims start at 2?
The event starts at 2. So normally the prelims are 2 hours, so that's 4. And the main event is normally 2 hours. So you had to be off way in time.
Yes, you might even be able to, if you're somebody who is going to tune into both, you'd probably be able to finish up Felder versus Hooker, and then immediately after that, you'll probably be able to start watching some of the prelims card for the Wilder Fury 2.
Yep. And actually, that was kind of smart because ESPN, Fury fights for ESPN, I think.
I think he fights for ESPN.
He does. Yeah, so ESPN also has UFC, so, you know, the ESPN gets some shine that day.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's like a doubleheader for them.
Yeah.
And the cross promotion from, because Wilder is signed to a different, I think, is he signed to Showtime?
Yeah, he signed to PBC.
Okay, so you pretty much have the cross promotion there on the UFC too, because the fans that are waiting for the Wilder fight probably will even just go ahead and tune into the UFC to watch fights earlier in the day.
Yeah, man.
So that leads into my next thing is, I guess you could go ahead and get, because I do want to ask you how you feel like. Well, first of all, let's start from step one here. So, how do you see the Felder and Hooker fight going?
Man, I love Paul Felder, man. But,
yeah, me too.
But Hooker, if Felder tries to stand in vain with Hooker, it's not going to be pretty. So I'm hoping that Felder comes in with an adjusted game plan where he does try to incorporate some kicks and some wrestling to negate Hooker's aggression. But that being said, I'm going with Hooker to win. I know my man Key's got the third round TKOs on lock. So I'm gonna go with fourth round. So I'm gonna go with fourth round KO Dan Hooker.
Fourth round KO Hooker.
Yep.
Okay. Would you like my prediction as well, or I could just go right into your prediction for the Wild of Fury card?
Go ahead. Who you got?
Okay. So, if you were somebody who was going to – what was that?
This is a tough fight to pick, man.
Yeah, this is a tough fight to pick because it's like – it's like, this is one of those ones that's like, it's hard because where you were saying, like, if one of these guys were to try to, like, change where the fight takes place and, you know, you say, you know, if, for example, if Felder were to try to take the fight to the ground, you know, that, it'd be hard to predict how that would go. Because we really don't often see Dan Hooker in those situations. You don't know, really too often see Felder in those situations either. I mean, both of those guys like to throw hands. But, and looking at it from just a striking standpoint, like, this is one of those things where, like, I usually like to watch, Dan Hardy. Is it Dan Hardy? Yeah, Dan Hardy and... They used to have the show. I think it's still going, but I haven't watched it in a while. I think it's part of the UFC Countdown where they kind of analyze like a main event fight, and they bring the clip. They bring up footage of both guys' recent fights, and then they have like those little markers on the screen, like it's like a touch screen, and they're kind of like analyzing, you know, how a guy throws his jab and the certain tendencies a guy might have, where he, you know, pivots, or when he changes his stance, or, you know, when he might switch to southpaw, the way he kind of tends to, you know, they do all those little type of, you know, it's very analytical, and they kind of draw right on the screen, and they can show you, and they bring it back in slow motion, and you know what I mean? So, you know, and even for the ground, you know, transitions on the ground, they do a lot of that. So I just think, like, Felder and Hooker would be a good fight, and to see that for, you would need to, because with the striking changes, I would just like to see how, you know, somebody like Dan Hardy would break down the striking, how it could go if you were to just have these two guys throw, let their hands go for five rounds, and where, because you would really see where, you know, somebody might fall short, or somebody might get caught just based on what they've done in the recent fights, or what they tend to do, you know, after three rounds, you know, give them, you know, both guys in their gas tank. I mean, there's a lot of – it's a tough fight to – there's a lot of variables, and it's two guys who, you know, if it goes the way that I imagine it going, it could be a chess match. It could be a striking chess match. And, you know, I think Hooker lately – you know, you guys usually hear me talk about the mental warfare. And I think Hooker lately has gotten to – he's gotten to a point where, you know, he's been talking about big fights, and he's getting a little bit I feel like he's gotten kind of big-headed lately, you know, with the recent wins that he's had. And it's just – I feel like he's gotten a little bit distant from – you know, just he's gone a little bit over with you know, in his own mind, just with competitive, just with the competitiveness, and he's talking about, you know, God, he doesn't want to fight guys who don't put, you know, butts in seats and things like that. You know, he didn't want to fight, you know, Khabib's friend there, who's Islam Makhachev, the one that was supposed to fight Kevin Lee. I don't want to butcher his name. Islam Makhachev. Yeah, so when he was going to fight him, he wasn't really wanting to fight him because he felt like the guy doesn't sell tickets. You know, no one wants to watch him fight. So I think Hooker might have gotten a little bit too, you know, big-headed lately with just one big fight and not, you know, maybe that could have caused him to steer away from focusing on his opponent. And, you know, he might even overlook guys and think that, and that's all speculation. It's all speculation. But I think Felder is in a place where he knows, and this is just me with my mental warfare thing. You know how anyone who listens know I talk about the mental warfare. What I think is that Felder is in a place where he is, it's not about either guy being in anybody's head. I think they could both be in each other's head. It seems like it's become a heated situation. You know, it seems like both guys, they want to tear each other apart. You know, I think Felder always goes into fights as the guy who has something more to prove than his opponent. Like, it always seems like that with Felder in almost all his fights. Every time I watch him fight, it's always people are usually talking about the other guy that he's fighting. It's usually not talking about Felder. And that's interesting because, you know, he's so knowledgeable, and people that watch fights know, you know, he's high level. It's just like, it seems like a lot of time the spotlight is on the guy he's fighting. I feel like Felder, to me, has a bit more to prove in this fight to get a big win over a guy like Dan Hooker. And I think that alone, you know what I got to do. I'm going to go with a third round TKO for the Irish Dragon. Cap off this fight.
Okay. But I just think that Hooker can't do mental warfare with Felder because Felder is basically part of the commentary team sometimes. And I just don't think you can mental warfare a guy that actually does play-by-play and color commentary. So I just don't think that plays a lot. So I think he's wasting his time with that. But I'm with you, man. I just think that this fight, these two guys are too close to really call. But it goes back to something I believe in. Can you adjust your game plan? And whoever makes the adjustments was going to win the fight. So what's your next question for me tonight? You said you had a few.
So my next question is, and for this one, I'm really just going to take the time to just sit back and listen, is I need to hear your breakdown for the boxing main event this weekend. You need to go ahead and walk us through this fight, bro. What's going to happen in this fight on Saturday night?
Okay. This fight is basically really simple. A lot of people will make it out to be more than what it has to be, but this fight is really simple. Everybody knows Fury is the better boxer. Everybody knows Deontay Wilder can knock you out with one shot. Now, the thing is the only way for Fury to outbox Wilder is he's going to have to get inside Wilder's reach. So he's going to have to take chances to get inside and actually outbox him. Now, Wilder, on the other hand, to me, he seems to lose rounds due to looking for one shot. I think Wilder needs to box Fury a little more in this fight. He can't come out looking for the one shot. He has to come out and actually try to box with Fury. Now, Fury is saying he's going to have him, he's going to get Wilder out of there by the second round. I think that's Fury trying to play mind games with Wilder, because Fury has to understand that he's the more skilled boxer. So him trying to go for a knockout really doesn't seem like a sound game plan to me. So I think he's just going smoke with Wilder. But all that being said, Fury being a better boxer, Wilder being the guy with the heavier hands, Fury is going to outbox him. But I think Wilder catches him, and this time he doesn't rise like the Undertaker. This time the ref doesn't administer a slow count. This time it'll be a no-doubter. Wilder wins by KO between the 8th and the 11th. Between the 8th and the 11th round, I got Wilder winning by KO. And if it go to distance, I got Fury winning on the judges' scorecards, because he's going to display more skills as far as boxing and throwing more punches. But I'm taking Wilder, the one-hitter quitter. He probably get it done between the 8th and the 10th round. I say KO in the 10th round.
Okay, so Wilder KO between the 8th and 10th round. That's the final call for this fight, people. You heard it here first.
Yeah, I just think people have to keep their eye on Fury. If Fury can close the space, if he can close the distance, and he's able to fight from the inside like he was able to do in the last fight after he got dropped, he can actually win, because Wilder is used to fighting that distance. And Wilder, if you ever watch his fights, he throws wild looping punches. And I predicted this the last time they fought. I said wild punches against Fury would get countered, and he would find himself getting outboxed. And that's what happened in the last fight. I think Wilder may learn from that, but I just don't think so, because if you watch the Ruiz fight, he did the same thing. He was throwing wild looping punches, and Ruiz was actually winning most of the fight till he got caught. So keep an eye on how Fury fights on the inside.
Okay. So, that right there is, I'm not going to give a prediction. I'm not going to give my prediction. I don't really even have a prediction for that. Y'all know I don't really watch boxing like that, so I really don't even know. I just wanted to get the opinion from the boxing guy on this show. So I just needed to get that out, and that needed to be heard. So the listeners just could know to have some kind of edge. Listeners could have some kind of edge going into the fight, some kind of idea of what they might be looking for or what they might be looking at. So I'm just thank you for giving us that. So now, because if I end up watching, I mean, I'm sure I'll end up watching the fight on Saturday night. I don't really have like necessarily plans to watch it, but I'll probably end up watching it. I think some of my boys are going to be ordering it. I just haven't really committed to watching it yet, but I probably will end up watching it. And then once I do, I kind of have an idea of what I'm looking at. So, and it's always cool to go into a fight with an idea of what each guy really brings to the table. I mean, I did watch the Wilder's last fight, and I don't know enough about boxing to really like look at it and really know what's really going on. Cause, and it's like that with a lot of sports and a lot of different types of, Like there's a lot of things like that where you there's a lot of different types of competition where if you don't really know how to really see what's happening, like there's something happening in front of you, but if you can't decipher what it is that's happening, then you don't really feel like anything is happening. It's almost like when you don't know what language, like if you don't know how to speak the language that somebody, that two people are speaking in front of you, you can see that they're talking and hear what they're saying, but you don't know the language. So you can't, like, what the, so whatever's happening, the energy in their conversation is completely different than the energy that you have because you have, you can't decipher what they're saying. So basically the language, you know, and something that I'm watching, you know, there's a whole type of technique, there's a whole type of combat that I don't understand. And there's certain types of ins and outs that I don't know how to view them. And that's a super fascinating thing to me about, you know, these different disciplines is that when you don't really know what you're looking at and how to view it, then you don't really know that something is exciting. So, like, I get that way with football, too. Like, a couple years ago, you know, and not even a couple years ago, every year there's you know, high-level games that people want to see a lot of touchdowns, but they end up being, you know, mostly defensive games. But it's those games where there's actually a lot going on, but a lot of times it's easy for the average fan, someone like me who is an average fan, to look at it and say this game is boring. Because it's a low-scoring game, and they're not really doing anything. There's not much excitement. But the more, like, the past year, I started to really ask, you know, when I didn't know what was going on in a football game, because I really don't know that much about football, but I started to ask more. And once I started to know more about what things meant when they were being thrown out there, I understood the intensity that the game was at. So I watched one of the wild card games, and really it was pretty much a defensive game for like the first three quarters. But it was actually a very exciting game. And the more that I was asking my dad about, you know, what everything meant that they were saying, I was actually locked in on the game. And a couple of years ago, if I was watching that same game, it would have lost my attention because I had no idea how to view. I had no idea how to break down what I was viewing. So eventually it just loses your attention because it's like your brain doesn't know what to do with it. It's like you're looking at it, but you're looking at absorbing it, but you're not really able to break it down and see what is happening in front of you. You see it, but you can't really get inside it. It's a fascinating thing, and that's how I feel about boxing. I can't really see or decipher what I'm viewing.
But, you know, man, it's like that with a lot of sports because, you know, man, somebody asked a fascinating question on Twitter last weekend or weekend before last. They said, if you only watch UFC, then I can't remember exactly what they said. That if you only watch UFC, then you really not into sports or something like that, or you're not a sports fan or something like that. And to me, some people start off as one sport fans, but then they grow into other sports. But sometimes other sports have to captivate their imagination. You know, like for me, it took me a while to come around to UFC because what I originally remember from the UFC when it first came out is it seemed barbaric. They didn't have weight class. You were like a little guy fighting like this super heavyweight. It didn't seem safe. It just didn't seem like a sport that I would catch on to. But once the UFC took over, and, you know, I started watching a little more. I started learning a little more. You know, it kind of strayed me away from boxing because at the time, the UFC was giving you all the top guys fighting the top guys, whereas boxing was straying away from that, whereas you was having boxers fight, handpick their opponents and stuff like that, and the top guys want to fight the top guys. And I think that's what opened up a niche for the UFC and combat sports, because boxing had fell off so much. And actually, boxing still, even though boxers make more money and everybody say boxing is king, I still feel boxing fans have come, more boxing fans have come over to the UFC than UFC fans have gone back over to boxing. But you make an interesting point, man. It's just that sometimes when you're watching another sport or another game or another team, somebody you're not familiar with, I think you just have to go into it with an open mind and, you know, go into it with an open mind and just watch. And then if you don't like it, you don't like it, you know. But you'll be surprised. If you go in with an open mind, with not prejudging, you know, just like with the XFL. I don't watch the XFL the last 2 weekends, and I really like it. I mean, they got some interesting rules. They got some stuff I think that'll work in the NFL. You know, they don't really huddle on offense. All the offensive players got earplugs or a microphone in their helmet, so when the play comes in, all the offensive players can hear the players at the offensive lineman. So, man, you just have to be open-minded and give it a try. Boxing is just one of those things that you have to, if you're not a fan of the sport or you're not a regular watcher of the sport, that's where you really need to listen to the commentators. Like Max Kellerman, Roy Jones, Andre Ward, Lennox Lewis. That's when you really have to pay attention to the commentators and listen to what they're saying, because they will give you a lot of insight into why fighters doing what they're doing, why they're doing, why they do this at this time, you know, why they keep throwing this punch and it's not effective. So if you're new to boxing, or new to any sport, if you want to get a better understanding of it, just listen to the commentators. Or you can listen to our show, and I'll break it down for you.
Well, that's even true, too, because I think there's a lot of fights where, hey, I mean, y'all could just call in and just ask us. We'll break down the fight for you. Because there's been some things that we very closely predicted on this show. There's been some moments that we predicted very close, and there's also not even just that, but you know, a lot of times people that I run into when I'm out watching fights, I find myself explaining to them what exactly is going on in a fight, or why a guy is doing something. And it's something that I used to raise an eyebrow to, you know, a couple of years ago. And I would look at it the same way they are and say, now, why in the world would this guy do that? You know, and then I found myself explaining that same scenario to, like, a group of people, you know, at a bar. And then I'm like, wow, like, this makes perfect sense. But then everybody understands it. So, like some, you know, for the top of my head, like, you know, when a guy goes to the ground, you know, he just won't get up off the canvas. And then they'll say, why is this guy, you know, he won't get up off the canvas. He's got his two legs kind of folded in the air. He kind of keeps his feet in the air, and he's got his back on the canvas. And then the other guy made it back to his feet, and he won't go near him. But he's near him, but he won't really get too close. And then the guy that's on the canvas, why doesn't he just get up off the canvas and they just fight on their feet? And then that's a moment where I'd say, well, the guy that's on the canvas, that's just a technique. He's trying to lure the guy that got back to his feet back down. he wants him to try to throw a punch. He knows he looks vulnerable, but the guy that's on the canvas is the one that probably has the better jiu-jitsu, and he wants to welcome that guy who's back to his feet to the ground. He wants him to make that mistake and, you know, and kind of leap forward and throw a strike. So he can kind of lock him in right there.
But you know what, though? I find that when I'm explaining a fight, that I'm not enjoying it. And it's like, that's why sometimes when I watch a fight, I rather watch it with people that already know the sport, because that way you can sit back and enjoy it rather than people that really don't know it, because you find yourself doing more explaining than really watching and enjoying, you know?
No, yeah. I can totally understand that.
Yeah.
Because at a point,
but look,
it becomes... No, go ahead.
Yeah, but look, it's like that's why, like, when I have, like, a fight party, I only invite, like, hardcore fight fans. I want to invite people who really not fight fans, because I want to be able to sit back, drink a beer, watch the fight, and enjoy it. I don't want to be coaching you up, you know, trying to expand your fight knowledge and stuff like that. So, you know, man, it's just, I mean, I really, to the people that are listening to the show, I'm really not trying to be an asshole about that, but But sometimes when there's a big fight, you really want to watch the fight and enjoy it. And you really can't enjoy it if you breaking down the nuances of the fight, every move somebody make, every punch and push and throw, every kick that gets checked, you know, you really can't enjoy the fight. But, you know, it comes with the territory of actually being a hardcore fan. You just get that sometimes. Sitting at Hooters a couple fights back, and there was a guy sitting beside me, and he really wasn't a UFC fan. And he was sitting there, he was like, hey, man, do you really be watching this? I'm like, yeah, you know, I really like this. And he was like, hey, why did that guy just do that? And I was sitting there like, damn, another one of those. But, you know, I was breaking it down to him, you know, and, you know, I didn't want to be an asshole. And it was just me there. So by the main event, by the co-main event, you know, he really wasn't, like, asking me any questions or nothing. You know, he was just sitting back, probably enjoying the fight itself. So, you know, that was kind of fun. But, you know, transitioning back into the UFC, there was a big fight this past weekend, man, with a surprising outcome. It might not be surprising to some, but I know it was surprising to me. And I'm going to ask my man Keys what's his opinion on this, because we have Błachowicz knocking out Corey Anderson, who was basically in line to be next for the champ, John Jones, if he would have won that fight. So we have Błachowicz beat him. So where does that leave us in the light heavyweight division, Keys?
Well, you know, one thing I want to just point out about that, and I was very happy, was that Błachowicz, you know, scored a huge knockout. That was a huge victory for him, and it's, you know, I really wouldn't doubt that. You know, Dana White is considering sending Błachowicz the contract to fight John Jones next. You know, I'm sure there's some other options on the table there. There's a Dominic Reyes rematch that a lot of people are vouching for. There's Thiago Santos rematch that I would say, you know, there's some people out there that we're definitely vouching for, and you could argue that that should be a rematch for that one too. Both were really good fights in my opinion. I wouldn't be mad seeing either one of those run back, not because I felt like the decision was wrong, more because it was just they were both competitive fights, and I would just enjoy seeing the two guys face off again. So that really be the reason. But I think that's where it kind of leaves the light heavyweight division, is you just have Corey Anderson kind of has to go back to the drawing board, and you know, he kind of gets thrown back into the mix. You know, I'd say he's still in the mix, you know, because he was on like a 3 or 4 fight win streak. I want to say he was on a 4 fight win streak. So he's definitely still up there. He's right there. I'd say like another, you know, his next fight, if he gets a big win, he's right back there. But Bukovic, yeah, probably. I wouldn't doubt they're gonna consider sending Bukovic a contract to fight Jones. I know Jones, you know, Jones had the face off, not a face off, but Jones was acknowledging him. I mean, ironically, the fight took place in his hometown of Albuquerque, New Mexico. So I really think that for the UFC was it was very interesting. Very interesting that took place in Albuquerque, and John Jones, of course, was octagon side for all the fights, and he was right there to, you know, to lock eyes with whoever came out on top in the main event, which was Bukovic. So that was just a very, you know, you can't write that up. You can't write that up in a movie. You know, that type of stuff is just perfect. You know, whoever thought about that and that the location, that whole thing was primed. You know, it was a perfect moment. And one thing I really loved was that the crowd was actually, there was the John Jones chant that was actually started up right after Bukovic got the knockout. You know, you would think that the attention would be on him, but it was actually a John Jones chant that broke out, you know, right after Bukovic's win. So, I thought that was hilarious, and I loved it. So,
yeah, I was definitely surprised that Corey lost at the fast that he lost. But I think I just think going into fights like that, where a guy might know that, might have it in the back of his mind that if I win this fight, I'll get a title shot. Sometimes they can put some kind of additional pressure on themselves. And I wanted to Corey do that. But at the same time, you got to be impressed by Bukovic's win and his performance. So, you know, I don't know if the UFC would give him a shot. I think the UFC is probably leaning more towards Reyes, the second John Reyes 2 fight. But the UFC really needs to go back and revisit history. When John fights a guy the second time, he literally destroys him. And I think Reyes will be no different. I don't think Reyes is a better fighter than DC, who got destroyed in the second fight. And I don't think that he's a better fighter than Gustafson, who got destroyed in the second fight. So I think they will probably look at that before they make their decision. But I would rather him fight Bukovic next. That way we can say that he fought all the top guys or the next guy in line the second time around with this title reign, and basically it'll be Anthony Smith, Thiago Santos, Dominic Reyes, and Jan Blachowicz. And I think if he sticks around, you will get the Reyes and Santos rematches. So, do I see Blachowicz being a threat to John's title? No. Because I don't think he's as well-rounded as a fighter as that he needs to be to compete at John's level. But it all depends on what John we get. Do we get the John that goes back to his dominating form, or do we get the John that's happy with just eking out wins. So it all depends on which John we get.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point to make about the rematches. You know, every time he's rematched a guy, he pretty much wins in explosive fashion. You know, he's very John Jones, he by the second fight has figured out his opponent. And there's really nothing that they can do after that. I mean, I said it when we reviewed the Reyes fight. I thought Jones was already making reads on Reyes's strikes in the second round. So I feel like that round one was really all Reyes had. That was his big moment. Round two, Jones defended most of his big shots. Round three, I want to say I gave that to Reyes, but it wasn't the way
close.
He looked. It was close, but it wasn't like the way he came out in the first round. And then the fourth and fifth round, I thought Jones had taken over the fight by then. Reyes was kind of just, I think he was tired, and he was just doing what he could to just, you know, get through those two rounds. So, I mean, that's a good point to make. If they were to rematch, I'm not saying that I think that the fight would be any different. I'm not even trying to think how the fight would go. I'm just saying that it would be, I'd be interested in seeing it. But with, you know, given what you're saying with the rematches, it does put up an interesting point to just say, maybe we don't need to see this guy fight another guy for the second time when we really don't see it being competitive the second time around. So maybe it is better to get fresh blood in there, somebody who he's never fought.
Yeah, I just think the UFC will always do, they should always do what's best for business. And I think right now, maybe the Reyes run back is probably best for business. But I think they are going to give Blachowicz the fight. But something else controversial happened this weekend, man. Diego Sanchez took a disqualification win, and he knew he was losing on all the judges' scorecards. And a lot of people felt like that was a punk move for him to take the DQ win, you know, instead of standing there and fighting, being that he didn't get hurt as bad as, you know, it wasn't as bad as that than it was. My opinion on that is everybody is not going to be Anthony Smith. Anthony Smith could have took the DQ win over John Jones and they fight, but Anthony Smith knew he was losing and he didn't want to win the belt that way, and I commend him for that. Now, Diego Sanchez, on the other hand, he's coming towards the end of his career. He's trying to get as many fights as he can get before the UFC, you know, cuts him. And basically, he's going to take a win any way he can get it, by hook or by crook. So my opinion is, I think it shouldn't be left up to the fighter. I think it should be left up to maybe the three judges on the outside or maybe an independent party to say whether or not a DQ should be warranted. And then if not, keep it moving. If so, you know, let the guy take the DQ, get the guy the DQ win.
Yeah, you know, it was it really wasn't a fight that I really cared for. You
know,
I really
yeah,
wanted
I know.
To see. Yeah, I was very much not a fan. I really don't care for the Pereira guy. I don't think he's a good fighter. I don't care. He just does these theatrics in there, and then people want. I don't care that he does flips or anything like that. That does not move the needle with me. I really could care less about the flips. And furthermore, he fought a guy in Diego Sanchez who is, you know, this Pereira, like, he fought Diego Sanchez as if he was a much more dangerous fighter than he really is. Okay, the Pereira, he basically stayed on the outside of the octagon, and he really didn't engage much with Sanchez. I mean, he threw his shots, but he more or less kept his distance. I really don't recall a moment where Pereira, like, rushed Diego Sanchez at any point. And it's kind of sad because I want to say Pereira is 29 years old, and I want to say off the top of my head, Sanchez is 36. And you're fighting a guy who you should have put on a better performance versus a guy like that. And I think the UFC knew that. You know, they said, let's put this guy who the fans like because he does flips versus a guy who we think he could easily beat. And, you know, whether or not they viewed it that way is unknown, what the motive was behind that being the co-main event or what they thought would happen with that fight, I don't know. But I just think that Pereira, if he was, you know, this prospect that people make him out to be, that fight would not have ended in a DQ. He would have beaten Diego Sanchez with ease. You know, he would have beaten him handily, and he didn't. He looked very hesitant to engage and to get close and to really throw with Diego Sanchez, and it was a sad fight to me, very sad fight. And Diego Sanchez, I don't know what he was doing. You know, he trains with this guy, or, you know, that he's wearing blindfolds and using chopsticks. Like, I don't know what he's doing, man. He's throwing nunchucks in parking lots. I don't understand. Like, he's doing like the Ultimate Warrior contest.
Well, you know, my opinion on Diego Sanchez, he should have been. My opinion is Diego Sanchez should have been out of the UFC maybe 2 years ago, not 3 years ago. He was on the street where he was getting knocked out, and it was just looked bad, and you felt bad for the guy. But, you know, he's still hanging around. So, you know. But, you know, we covered a lot tonight. You know, we talked about the Tyson, Fury, Deontay Wilder fight coming up this weekend. You know, we talked about the Corey Anderson loss to Vukovic. We just talked about the Diego Sanchez, you know, questionable DQ win. What did we talk about in the first segment? God damn, first my memory. Oh, we talked about Paul Felder and Dan Hooker. My bad. Yeah, we talked about Paul Felder and Dan Hooker. So, episode 128, we're about to wrap it up. Keys, you got any last words?
Enjoy.
You're breaking up, bro. Well, we have a technical difficulties with my boy Keys. But, you know, we're going to sign off for the night. Next Wednesday, we'll recap Paul Felder and Dan Hooker. We'll recap Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder. You know, Probably we'll talk about the latest UFC news and rumors, along with Bellator. So everybody have a good evening. I'm about to get out here and shovel my driveway. Like we always say, I can hear you now. Nah, you still breaking up, bro. It sounds like you're on the elevator or something. So, yeah, me and my man Key signing off for the night. And as always, in closing, I'm going to leave you with a peace.